Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of In the Barn. I'm Robin.
And I'm Kelsey. And in today's episode, we're going to discuss the current world-ranked number 4 venting rider, Oliver Townend. It's time to really discuss his lack of concern or care for his horses, his employees, and the people around him.
We're back.
It was an accident. We did not mean to be gone for that long.
Well, I mean, it was an accident, but it also wasn't. I don't know if you guys have heard of this thing called life. Dude, it gets in the way of everything.
Yes. Yeah. Our intent, we had planned to do an episode here, there. We've discussed many ideas and it just, things kept happening. Things kept being busy. And yeah, a year. I cannot believe we've been gone for almost a year. But yeah, we are back and we have a hopefully extremely interesting episode for you guys today.
I'm excited for this episode. This has actually been one I wanted to do for a little bit.
Oh, sure.
But we never felt like we had enough to do it, really. And then 2022 rolled around and some things happened. And then 2023 rolled around and some more things happened. And then I found the holy grail, the lawsuits. And that changed everything.
So with that, should we start the story of Oliver Townend?
Yeah, I think we addressed the elephant in the room of which, hey, we took a hiatus. Whoops-a-daisy, but it's over now, so.
Wait, let's not jinx it. We're hoping it's over now, but we will see how life.
Oh, that's true. Let's not give the people false hope. Please do not get your hopes up. Maybe this will be your once-a-year episode. Who knows?
We do love you guys and love our listeners, and we do appreciate all the emails and the DMs and the even reviews asking where we are and hoping for us to come back. So we do really appreciate you guys. We never meant to leave for that long. We love this podcast. We love being able to share our research and our experience with you guys. So we are trying to get back here and be more consistent. That is definitely the goal. But we are just busy individuals living our lives, recording from our kitchen tables. So,
whoa, now. I'm not at the kitchen table. I'm at a desk. Thank you very much. I'm a professional.
I was supposed to be at a desk, but my HDMI cable's missing. So I'm at the kitchen table right now because, I don't know, somebody walked off with my computer screen cable.
That today's episode is about Oliver Townend. It's shocking. It actually is really shocking when I started reading and doing more research because I feel like you always know like the things that catch the headlines. Like you remember his 2018 badminton, remember, you know, a little bit of 2022, and then especially this last year, right? The headline was him with Swallow Springs having to be pulled up on course by the grand jury. And like you remember those things. But when you actually start digging into the whole history of stuff, holy crap. Dude, there's a lot that comes out that you're like, whoa, I did not know all of this. And I am so much more justified in my feelings of distaste and dislike.
Yes, I think you've been very open from day one that you've never been a big Oliver Townend fan. I have always been on the fence. Like, he's neither rubbed me the wrong way or really impressed me. His interviews are always so awkward and so uncomfortable, but there's a lot of reasons for why that could be. But definitely after a little bit of research and after this episode, I'm definitely in your camp now where I am no longer. Again, I was never a fan of him. I just like could never get a read on him if I liked him or not. So
right, you just never felt one way or another.
Yeah, exactly. So now I know how I feel. Okay, so here we go. I'm going to just give a brief intro to who he is, how he got his start, and share some of his winning record with you guys. And then I'll let Robin take it away with the real tea. One of the articles I used, I like finding articles that are not written by horse journalists or horse like industry pages.
Yes.
Because oftentimes I think people are a lot more open and they aren't as careful with how they word things. So I definitely enjoy trying to find those alternative like media sources or like the normal media sources when we are talking about these kind of riders. Because like I said, they'll let things slip sometimes. A lot of my research comes from a 2014 article that was written by the Financial Times and is under a section called My First Millions. Oliver was born near Huddersfield, England, which is between Manchester and Leeds, or basically in the middle of England for those non-British folk in the room.
That's both of us.
Yeah, I definitely Googled it. I definitely Googled where it was. So he was born November 15th, 1982, to Alan and Eve Townend. His grandma owned a dairy and his father worked as a milkman, so he was able to like inherit the route from his grandma. I was unclear if his grandma owned the dairy and then his dad like was the milkman delivery person, or if they both worked for a dairy, because this story about his dad being a milkman is shared in a lot of articles that like, wow, Oliver had this, you know, unique story where his dad and his mom are tradespeople. They're not super wealthy. And somehow he became a successful upper level competitor. I do think this story is a little overplayed because who cares that his dad was a milkman? Who cares that he wasn't super wealthy? That's how a lot of people got their story. Like a lot of people got their start that way. But also his parents were both horse enthusiasts. His dad was an eventer. He was, yes, an amateur, not a professional eventer, but his dad was competing at Advanced and winning. He took Oliver with him to Burley when Oliver was 2 years old. So like his dad was doing the thing. Like his dad was a big time eventer. Yes, not a professional eventer, but to be competing at Burley as an amateur, like that is where he got his start, is from his parents. Not necessarily like the milkman component of the story. His dad was an eventer and his mom competed in side saddle, but at like the lower county level shows. So that's where he got his start from. According to Oliver in a 2012 Independent article, he states that his first words at the age of two was a full sentence. I'm going to Burley. Those were his first words. I am going to Burley, which is phonetically great for a two-year-old. I'm really impressed. So Oliver started riding when he was 7 years old. He started in like junior jumpers in the Hunter Ring. He did really well, actually. I think by age 11, so 2 years later, he was like winning championships in the junior jumpers. However, his eye and his goal was always on being an eventer. He grew up recording like badminton and other horse events that were broadcast on TV. He would record them on the VHS and then watch them over and over. He became obsessed with Mark Todd. Like Mark Todd became his idol and he began like imitating everything Mark did while he was riding. Oliver would like try to duplicate that on his horse. And kind of in a full circle moment, Oliver later in life ended up selling Mark Todd Land Vision. And that was the horse Mark Todd won a badminton in 2011 on.
Okay, but Oliver was never happy about that sale.
No.
And that's one of the horses that he seems to have always regretted selling because,
yes,
you know, he did not come from a wealthy background. So he did have to sell his horses to fund his career and to fund being able to go to shows. So he's always really regretted selling that horse, especially after the horse won.
Absolutely. Yeah. Later in Oliver's career, Mark Todd was being interviewed and the interviewer was asking Mark Todd about like one of the horses he had previously won on, and Mark Todd like couldn't remember. So what he said to the interviewer was, ask Oliver, he'll tell you everything about my life and my career. Right. Oliver did not appreciate that. He kind of felt like he was some sort of sad eventing geek and sort of ostracized by Mark Todd. Like, Mark Todd's not a very good sport, in Oliver's opinion, it seemed like. It was Oliver's words, sad geek, is what he called himself after hearing Mark Todd say this. So he is, like, obsessed with eventers. He's also very obsessed with Andrew Nicholson, is someone he idolized and, like, knew everything about. And apparently Andrew's a much, like, better sport about it and finds it a lot funnier that Oliver knows more about his career than he does. Mark Todd does not seem to find it very amusing. Like I said, from a young age, his eye was being an Olympic-level eventer. And by age 13, he kind of figured out the best way to get there and fund his dreams was to sell his horses. He learned at an early age that he is going to have to sell his horse in order to get the next one, in order to pay the next fees and move on. His dad actually ended up having to sell his best Advanced horse in order to help fund Oliver's expenses and his dreams. At age 16, he dropped out of school to pursue horses full time. He ended up riding with a bunch of like jumper and hunter trainers in England who I've never heard of, so I didn't write their names down. But he spent quite a few years just being a working student and riding in different barns in England. At 21, he was able to sort of scrape together enough money to start his own barn and his own business. And he basically called everyone he knew and he said, send me your worst horse. The horse that bucks, rears, bolts, won't get over the jump, falls on course. Send them to me and I will ride them. And at this time, he had to either win to survive or sell what he had and sell his horses. So again, he's learning that money is very, very important and that you cannot form these attachments to your horses because you have to sell them if you want to continue.
Yes.
2009 was when he made it big. Yes, he'd already been competing for the British team previously. I think in 2007, he won the European Championships. 2009, though, was his break. He became the number one rider in the world that year after winning both badminton and burley. Those were his first five-star wins ever. And he won it, won both of those, and made his first $1 million that year. Had he gone on to win Kentucky or Rolex, he would have won the Grand Slam, the Venting Triple Crown, and it would have been an even bigger deal. When asked in that Financial Times article, what was the most challenging period of your career? He mentions that it's that 2010 to 2012 period. He says, the 3 years from 2010 to 2012. In 2010, I was competing for the richest prize in eventing in Kentucky, the Rolex Grand Slam. Had I won, I would have been a £250,000 richer. But I fell off instead and ended up with 7 broken bones. In 2011 and 2012, Flint and Quest, my two good horses on whom I'd won badminton and burley, were coming at the end of their careers. In terms of their ages, 15 and 16 years old. It takes years to reproduce animals of their caliber, and I had already sold the horse that won badminton with Mark Todd. According to that to a 2021 British Eventing Life article, there was also another big challenge for him during this time period. No one wanted to buy his horses anymore. His feeling on this issue was that no one wanted to buy a horse that had just won a five-star or up-and-coming horses in a five-star eventer's barn because there must be something wrong with them. Why wouldn't he keep these horses? People didn't seem to understand that he needed to sell horses in order to survive, in order to pay his bills and survive in this sport. And so that was his view of what was going on during this time period, that people just didn't understand why he'd be selling these horses. So he would send them to other barns so that people wouldn't know they were necessarily his horses that were being sold, and they could test ride them in other barns without being clouded by the knowledge that these were Ollie's horses.
Huh.
Yeah, isn't that kind of weird?
That's a weird take on it. Yeah. Especially knowing the horses he was riding around that time. I have a feeling there was something else actually that was causing people not to buy his horses, but we'll get there.
That's his view on why. I thought it was interesting, so that's why I included it in my synopsis or my little intro.
It's an interesting take on that.
But on the other hand, like, I don't disagree. Like, people do not expect you to sell your five-star horses. They expect you to keep those because that horse has given you so much. Why would you not want to, like, see them to the end of their life? And I understand you cannot keep every horse. I absolutely know that. So I don't understand what that relationship is for him and his horses. So from that Financial Times article, again, discussing having to sell horses and that horse he sold to Mark Todd, he says, will I ever have a horse like Land Vision again? He said, I hope so. Have I compromised my chances of the Olympics by selling my horses? Absolutely. No question. If money were no object, I would be at the Olympics. But there is no point worrying about that unless I win the lottery. I have sold 10 of the best horses I've ever sat upon. Also, randomly in this time period, he started a clothing brand called Town and Direct. So I believe this was done in partnership with someone else. I'm not sure who, because some articles say that he endorsed the brand while others said he owned it. Also has his name as the main brand, as like Townend, that's his name. So I think he has some big financial stake in it. Unfortunately, this brand did not last more than a couple years. They did sell high-end riding wear and athleisure type clothing, but I think in 2016, it like went away. So he currently operates out of a 40-acre stables called Gladys Farms, and he proudly owns and runs this barn that he was able to buy when he was 25 in the year 2007. So that's pretty impressive that he does have his own farm that he owns and operates. And I think that's a big deal to him to not be renting from someone or, you know, leasing a stable that he has his own place. A quick look through his winning record. In 2007, he won team gold in the European Championships, and he does this again in 2009 and 2017. 2006, he got third at badminton. 2009 was first at badminton and burley and eighth in Kentucky. 2010, he got fifth in Lumulin and fourth in burley. 2014 was second at badminton, fourth in Lumulin, and eighth in burley. 2017, he wins burley. 2018, first in Kentucky, second in badminton, and second in burley. 2019, first in Kentucky, second in badminton, and third in Burley. 2021, first in Kentucky and second in Maryland. 2021, he also got team gold at the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. And this was a huge deal because England hadn't won gold in like 50 years when the team finally was able to bring it back home. 2022, he got third in badminton, and then 2023, he got seventh at Lumiulin and second in badminton. And obviously, I just picked like the five-star events that he placed the best at. He is a very avid competitor. He has a lot of horses. He's at a lot of different events every weekend. He also has a lot of withdrawals, retirements, horses that don't finish. So he's got a pretty extensive record. If you want to look at it, you can go on to British Eventing and see his whole record. I just like grabbed the biggest and the best, which is the five stars or four stars when he was competing. So in a 2021 article in Populous magazine, Oliver insisted that man and horse are a solid team. More than anything, I love horses. In all the articles I read about Oliver, there was definitely a clear undertone that money really matters, and that because he didn't have it initially, he now really values it. And I think when you are putting money as the number one goal, welfare of those around you can easily sort of be jeopardized. One other thing about Oliver is that he has a unique method of finding and training horses. Not only did he start by calling everyone he knew to find the worst horse in their barn, but he has continued this. And this is a method, a training method and purchase method we've heard of before from other people who maybe didn't have the cleanest past. So Townend is famed for getting the most out of his horses that are relatively modest or have fitness problems, like Carousel Quest, on whom he won Burley thrillingly in 2009, owned by one of his greatest supporters, Andrew Cawthray? Oh, I'm so sorry, I butchered that.
Cawthray.
Andrew Cawthray, who maintains 20 horses at his yard. And one other weird thing I'll share before I pass it on is he believes that many of those in the eventing world have a negative view of him. A lot of people he competes with, he thinks, just don't understand him, and they're just there to poke holes in him and tear him down. But as time has gone on in his career, he has stated that he's been approached by other competitors that say he's changed, that he's grown up. And he replies, "I've not changed at all. Your opinion of me is what has changed."
At this point, I think it's pretty easy to say that Townend has had a very prominent eventing record, and no one is able to deny the results he's gotten, the medals he's won and brought back to his country. You know, that's what matters to a lot of different organizations, as well as people that are competing. They want to win, and there's not anything bad about that, but it does come with its own drawbacks. And so with that, we'll dive into my stuff, and I have a question for you. How many yellow cards do you think Oliver Townend has earned over the course of his career?
I
know the answer.
I know, but I forgot. No. I know you did, and I forgot. And I think what I said originally was 10, but that's a lot of yellow cards. So I'm going to go with like 3. Is that what I know you told me this, and I already forgot. I'm so sorry.
No. He's gotten 0 yellow cards.
Dang it. And you'd already told me that answer.
Yeah, I did, because I was so excited about it. Over the course of his career, Townend has gotten 0 yellow cards. The follow-up, though, is how many verbal warnings do you think he's been given?
Okay, he's gotten 10 of those.
Yes. He's been given 10 verbal warnings. 6 of those have been for abuse due to excessive use of the whip. And to put that into perspective for you, I decided to look up a handful of other top riders to compare how many warnings they have been given or yellow cards they have gotten over the course of their career, right? It's not comparable for someone that rides at every single event 5 different horses to you and I, the average person that hasn't ridden at an event in like multiple years, you know? Yeah. Obviously, he's had more opportunities for things like that to happen where we haven't had that same level opportunity. So to put it into comparison, Buck Davidson, who is a U.S. rider that has had a very, very long career, has only ever had 2 yellow cards, one for dangerous riding, the other for blood in the horse's mouth.
And that's yellow cards, not warnings.
That's yellow cards. So Buck Davidson has had 2 yellow cards. Boyd Martin had 1, and it was a verbal warning for non-compliance with sporting rules, had irregularities with passport.
Okay.
Pippa Funnel has had 2, 1 yellow card and 1 eventing recorded warning for dangerous riding, for jumping the rope, and 1 for jumping after elimination. William Fox Pitt, he had 1, a verbal warning for not wearing appropriate headgear during prize giving. Andrew Nicholson.
Wow, wait. That's a yellow card offense?
No, that's a verbal warning.
Okay, now he's gotten a verbal warning for not wearing headgear, but no yellow card.
So Buck Davidson has had two yellow cards. Boyd Martin has had no yellow cards, just a warning.
Gotcha, okay.
Pippa Funnel had one yellow card and has had one recorded event warning.
Okay.
William Fox Pitt, his was just a warning for not wearing appropriate headgear during a prize giving, which whatever. Andrew Nicholson has had two. Both of those were warnings for incorrect behavior toward official stewards.
Okay.
Ross Cantor had one, a yellow card, for continuing after three refusals. You look at riders like Mikkel Jung, Ingrid Klimke, Nicola Wilson, they've all had zero. So it's not hard to have a top-of-the-line career, compete all over the world in multiple Olympics, be from a variety of countries on a number of different horses, and have under three total warnings and yellow cards for the entirety of your career. It's not hard.
Yeah, and most of those, are paperwork errors, maybe getting grumpy with an official who's score or opinion you didn't like. Those are all non-horse welfare, or for the majority of them. Obviously bucks were definitely horse welfare, but most of those are not horse welfare concerns.
No, and bucks were far apart. It was only two incidences, so I could see how you could write both of those off. While they are horse welfare, could be freak accidents or just unfortunate luck at that time. It's 10 verbal warnings, 6 of which due to abuse of the whip. That's a lot harder to write off and to ignore, especially when you have comparable riders also on the same teams, nowhere near that.
Yes, that's definitely an established pattern.
It is. The first of his infractions didn't come about until 2008, but leading up to 2008, Oliver had already had quite a few notable accomplishments, as Kelsey was telling you about. In 2004, he was 32nd at the British Eventing Year-End Rankings. But after that, 2005, he jumped to 2nd in the Year-End Rankings and has never been out of the top 3 since. In 2006, he was 3rd at Badminton on Flint Curtis. In 2007, he was 1st at Bertone. He was riding a lot, he was making waves, and he was winning. And if we've learned anything about our dear organizations, whether it's FEI, USEF, or BE, if you're winning and bringing home medals, a blind eye can be turned to pretty much anything. Which brings us to the first of his recorded infractions, which was 2008 Bramham International. Now, I know 2008 feels like a far jump back to look into warnings and infractions, and some people may feel like we're grasping at straws, but for me, this just kind of begins laying the groundwork of his patterns of behavior and his treatment of horses. So it's easy, to look at one infraction and say accidents happen. Emotions can get the better at times, which is totally understandable. But when we zoom out and take in all of these separate incidences together, we see that these aren't one-off happenstances.
Yeah.
He hasn't learned from his mistakes, and his continued apologies are just words with no action to back them up to this day. So the first of his infractions happened May 2008, where Oliver Townend received not one, but two verbal warnings for separate rides on two different horses. The first one was on Flint Curtis, and the second was on Golden Hue for finishing on a very tired horse for both horses. Now, many riders have finished on a tired horse one time or another.
Yeah.
Coming to mind, Marilyn Little. Another one is Elisa Wallace. Two completely different instances, completely different styles of riders. It can happen. And you can write this one off probably in terms of just a miscalculation as far as conditioning goes. But we do know that a tired horse is much more likely to make mistakes and have a serious fall happen and become injured. I don't know exactly what the rules were back then, but today and in the most recent years, if you get that as a warning, it's actually an automatic yellow card.
Interesting.
Back then, I don't know if that was necessarily the same in terms of FBI rules, so he just received a verbal warning. Oliver wound up missing the chance of being selected for the Olympics in 2008 when the owners of Flint Curtis, one of the horses that he got the warning on, withdrew the horse from contention, citing that they'd rather focus on British competitions, which they did. In 2009, Oliver went on to win first at Batman, where he was on Flint Curtis, and then first at Burley on Carousel Quest, which for the first time, this put him in the running to win the Rolex Grand Slam. And the Rolex Grand Slam basically is when a single rider wins Batman in Burley and Kentucky back to back. So if he won Kentucky as well the following year, he had the chance to win, I think it was £250,000, or it's £300 something thousand dollars, which is not a small amount of cash by any means.
And not when you're desperate. Like, that's a good amount of money when you're desperate.
Now, you heard me mention a horse, Carousel Quest, and you heard Kelsey talk about Carousel Quest earlier, owned by Andrew Cothray, that he won Burley on. Remember Quest's name, because he is an important horse that we will come back to a little bit later. But this takes us on to 2010, where Oliver secured the ride on a new horse by the name Ashdale Cruise Master, or more affectionately known by his barn name, Splash. In 2010, March, at Lincolnshire, Oliver took Ashdale, or Splash, out around course, and they didn't quite have the successful run Oliver was hoping for, as it resulted in a horse fall for both him and Splash. However, Oliver was still pursuing the Rolex Grand Slam, and if he could secure the win at Kentucky that year, it would be a huge deal. When April rolled around and they showed up at Kentucky, Oliver decided to save Carousel Quest for WEG, the World Equestrian Games, and instead to take two horses who were relatively new to his barn, OTD Master Rose and Ashdale Cruise Master. Unfortunately for Oliver, this run at Kentucky, rather than resulting in the Rolex Grand Slam, ended with a rotational fall for both him and Splash at the Hollow, which were jumps 20 and 21A, which was an upright postern rail to a 3-foot downbank. And if you Google this fall specifically, you will easily see the jump and the setup I'm talking about. And I will not deny anything all day long. This was a bad fall for both horse and rider. They fell hard, and they fell in a terrible location that they were both hurting after this. Oliver wound up being airlifted to a hospital in the UK, where he was discovered to have a broken shoulder, collarbone, sternum, and 4 broken ribs. Splash, however, was reported to be uninjured and totally fine, despite receiving a trailer ride back to the barn that day. However, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that in my opinion, and I know and understand I'm not a vet and I was not on the grounds there and I never met Splash in person, but seeing the fall itself and knowing the aftermath, I don't think Splash was fine after that fall. Or at the fall he had a month before that at Lincolnshire, nor was Splash okay at the fall after that. At the time, everyone was expressing their sorrow towards Oliver, not just over his severe injuries, but also lamenting the loss of the Rolex Grand Slam for him. And there was a little controversy surrounding this fall that actually nothing to do with Splash and everything to do with Oliver's .2 air vest. I'm not trying to dismiss the severity of Oliver's fall. It was definitely a bad fall, and honestly, it easily could have been fatal with how they fell on the downbank. It was a really bad fall. However, Oliver had stated that what saved me was the .2 air jacket that I've been wearing since it was first produced. It works like a car airbag. You are attached to the saddle, and when it releases in a fall, it blows air into your jacket, thus cushioning any fall. Sales wound up increasing significantly for the jacket in the weeks following his fall, all while proclaiming that the vest had saved his life. Obviously, there's nothing wrong about pushing safety equipment, and there's nothing controversial about that. But where there is a smidge of controversy that was started was that his air vest didn't save his life. When you watch the videos and you look at the picture, Oliver's vest wasn't deployed. During that fall, he never parted far enough from the pommel, so the cord for the air vest was never pulled and the vest was never deployed. When Splash landed on him, the vest was flat as ever. Like, nothing was happening with the vest. It wasn't until Splash got off him that the vest was triggered.
Interesting. Because, like, yeah, he would have been, they would have just, like, I haven't seen the fall, but I can picture it in my head that if the horse is going down a bank and they crumple and roll, you're stuck with the horse.
So they weren't down the bank yet. Splash had caught his leg on the postern rail.
Gotcha.
And so he did a rotational and fell right on the edge of the bank. So, like, it was a bad fall all day long. Like, no one was getting up okay from that fall. But he never parted far enough from the pommel. And we all know that, like, if you forget to unclip your air vest before you get off and you suddenly pull it, like, you have to get far enough away from the pommel to trigger it.
And you have to apply weight. I think there's also, like, an amount of weight that has to be applied for it to pop.
Right, exactly. And so when Splash landed on top of him, the vest was never deployed. I mean, this isn't a huge problem, but, like, people at the time felt that it was a tad dishonest.
He's also doing this, I'm assuming, for some sort of sponsorship deal, whether he has a current sponsorship with them or is hoping to get one in the future. I'm sure he's saying this for the money or the potential money.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, sales did increase afterwards after he specifically said, if you're not buying one of these, you're slow on the uptake.
Okay, thanks.
But this fall also marked the second fall for Splash that he had within 30 days. Now, typically, when this occurs, by FEI's rules and regulations, the pair would have to be asked to step back down a level or two and then re-qualify before making another attempt at that level. And this goes for any pair that has a horse fall, two horse falls at the same level within a 12-month period. But these two falls happen at different levels, and Splash wasn't going to make a reappearance at another five-star event until 2011. 12 months later, which I would argue is still within that 12-month window, I would say, questions should be raised. April 2011 at Badminton, Ashdale and Oliver go out on course and unfortunately have yet another horse and rider fall. And for those counting, which hopefully you are because we've only reached three, that makes two horse falls at this level within 12 months, three falls within 13 months. Ashdale was never downgraded as he should have been, nor did Oliver receive a warning. Although, I will say I'll give the benefit of the doubt because, you know, there's only so many five-star events. Making a rider drop down a level is what they would have done already.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you can't go to a five-star this month. Boo-hoo, there's not one until, like, August. Like, it's okay.
Do you have to go down to, like, three-star then?
I think they would have to drop down two levels. But most of the time when this happens, FEI actually doesn't make them do anything. FEI, from what I've seen over the few occurrences, doesn't hold up their rules.
And that's hard because, like, a lot of times you're not going to be competing. Like, your training program is to build up to the five star, right? So, like, you don't just come out doing four stars all season. You often start with a three star. Then if you're going to do a long, a short, like, right, you have that plan. So you're already bouncing up and down the levels that I bet that doesn't even matter most of the time.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, is that, like, already they were going to drop back down, whether they're going to they weren't going to go to another five star next weekend. So it really is kind of a hit or miss rule when you are competing at that level and changing levels so frequently. And I understand that the three falls were, I guess, spread out enough to not warrant any action. I can understand it.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know about you, but if I had had multiple hard falls with the same horse on course within a year, I would be asking a lot of questions. I wouldn't, however, wait a handful of months and then try taking the horse intermediate. But Oliver did. October 2011, at Osby, Oliver decided that Splash had not nearly had enough yet and chose to run him once again, going intermediate at Osby, claiming, "I wanted to give him a quiet run before the end of the season to see whether the treatment he had been receiving had helped him." Oliver ended up pulling up partway around the cross country after Splash seemed to lose coordination. He was taken to the nearby Oakham Veterinary Center, and tests revealed that Ashdale Cruisemaster had a number of internal problems that unfortunately couldn't be treated. And tragically, Splash was put down. Some sources citing neurological issues. There's a little bit of controversy back and forth. We'll get there. And in most instances, I would say this would be a heartbreaking scenario where a rider did everything they could to help their horse and put their horse before the sport. But that's not what happened here. And that's not me jumping to conclusions. That's me reading an in-depth lawsuit that goes great into detail on poor Splash's medical history. And this is the document that I cannot let go of. This document just infuriates me beyond anything for poor Splash. He deserved so much better than the hand he was handed. And up to this point, I can totally see how a lot of these occurrences would be bad luck. You know, running two exhausted horses could be a miscalculation in terms of conditioning. Having three serious falls on one horse could be freak accidents, which do happen to a number of riders at any point in their career, professional or not. What I can't look past, though, is that none of these were accidents, and Oliver knew. He knew the whole time. You see, Splash was not a horse in Oliver's barn originally. Now, he didn't get the ride on Splash until 2010. Prior to 2010, a rider by the name of Emily Gilruth actually produced Splash to the four-star level, running him at Burley before the owners Edna and Henry Harding handed the ride over to Oliver. And fun fact for you, Emily rode Splash for 4 years, attending around 30 events. They retired once and withdrew once in all that time with no recorded horse fall. Oliver had Splash for 2 years, rode him at 14 events, withdrew out of five of those, retired once, and had three horse falls. They only completed 5 out of 14 events.
That's not great. That's not great odds.
Well, especially if you're taking over the ride of someone that was already riding the horse to that level, and that's a drastic change. That's a huge change going on.
That's a huge change, but why? Like, what do you change that makes it so different? Obviously, the horse has some type of problem we're going to get into, some type of physiological problem, but, like, how do you get there? Like, I don't understand. Tack is something we've identified as, like, bits, right? A lot of riders, those who bring them up the levels.
His saddles could have been completely different. Short tree points versus long tree points could have been.
Yeah, because I know we talk a lot about riders who bring them up the levels and they start in a snaffle. Then suddenly a new rider takes them on and they're in a hack-a-gag and things are not going well. Is a bit enough to cause these sort of problems? Absolutely not, but it's enough to sometimes
amplify them.
Yeah, amplify it. Yeah, exactly.
But this Oliver taking over the ride on Splash was not an amenable switching of the riders. In fact, Emily Gilruth, Splash's previous rider, wound up taking the horse's owner to court over it. The case is Gilruth versus Harding. And the reason Gilruth was suing the Hardings was because they had a contractual agreement that Emily had the ride on Splash. And during that contract, the Hardings could not engage another rider to compete Splash without consent from Emily. Seeing as how her and Splash were competing very well at the three-star level, and by the end of 2009 season, it appeared Emily and Splash were in the running for a place on the British Olympic team, Emily was absolutely not aware that the Hardings were in talks with Oliver to take the ride away from her. Yet, on September 23rd, 2009, Emily was informed that she would no longer be permitted to ride Splash and that he was taken from her yard to Oliver Townend's on October 4th. Emily wound up suing the Hardings for a breach of their contract, which was an oral agreement back in June 2006 that laid out the terms of their agreement, basically, one of which being that if the Hardings searched out another rider without Emily's consent, their contract would be terminated and the Hardings would owe her 25% of the amount Splash's value had increased to. In fact, Emily had ended up putting their oral agreement in writing,
yeah,
but the Hardings refused to sign it, stating that they were good for their word and would honor the agreement.
Oh, red flag, red flag. But good on her.
I know, good on her, but clearly that went about as well as one would expect to, and off to the lawsuit we go.
Right, I mean, they should have signed it or recognized its existence, but also, like, good on her for documenting everything and keeping track.
You may be wondering as to why I'm bringing up this lawsuit, right? Because, like, it doesn't appear to have anything to do with Oliver. It's between Emily Gilruth and the owners of Ashdale Cruise Master, the Hardings, which to a degree is true, I'll give you that. But the fun thing about lawsuits is the discovery and all the information that comes out while the two parties are arguing back and forth, where they let out a lot of information fly about others involved in the background.
All right, let's hear it.
The court case was basically an argument over how much Splash was worth at the time Oliver took over the ride. The court used a third-party expert, Carol Gee, to evaluate Splash's worth based on his event records, performances, and some of his vet records. Carol Gee, who runs Fernhill Sport Horses over in Kilkenny, Ireland.
Never heard of them.
Yeah, you never heard of a Fernhill horse?
Never heard of Fernhill? That doesn't sound familiar.
Very well-known and prominent trader of event horses. She's the one that evaluated Splash and evaluated him to be valued at $200,000. According to the court, if Emily won and the Hardings were found in breach of their agreement, which they were, the Hardings would have to pay her 25% of $200,000, which was roughly $42,000. The Hardings obviously didn't want to pay that. No one wants to pay that, which began a long slew of them arguing back as to why Splash was basically worthless.
Okay, but $42,000 is not a lot of money in horse world. Like, that is one good horse. That's not a lot. So for him to be valued so much higher than that, like, sure. I don't know what her calculations, if that took in, like, potential winnings, if he was, I don't.
So what she did was what horses at that time that had a similar competition, gotcha, record were going for, and she's experienced at trading them. That's how much those horses were going,
yeah,
for at that,
absolutely,
time.
Absolutely. That's how much a Fernhill horse goes for, y'all.
That was back in 2011. Guess what they're going for today? I don't even want to know.
Y'all, like, whoa.
When Carol Gee evaluated Splash's worth, she noted that the horse has had numerous health concerns now. But at the time Oliver took over the ride, those health concerns might not have been present.
Sure.
Which a lot of people can say that, right? I mean, how many people have bought a horse and then found out something unfortunate later down the line?
Totally.
The Hardings were quick to argue back and say that, well, actually, we knew. So, ha, the horse was worth nothing. And they provided veterinary records about it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so you're like, okay, this is, I understand what you're arguing for here, buddy, but it is not revealing you in a good light.
Don't think he cares.
Apparently, on December 11th, 2009, 2 months after Splash arrived at Oliver's barn, Splash was evaluated for a variety of issues, including back pain. The veterinary records go in depth at sharing how Oliver and his team managed, and manages in air quotes because I think we saw how well it was managed while Splash ended up on the ground at basically every event, managed Splash's back pain through extracorporeal shockwave, which is a common treatment. It's a non-invasive procedure to help with arthritis and that kind of injuries. He was medicated in his hocks and coffin joints. In July 2010, Splash developed tendonitis, but managed it conservatively. They had radiographs that showed that Splash had severe overlapping dorsal spinous from his withers down his entire back. Basically, very severe kissing spine syndrome. However, x-rays of Splash's back weren't obtained until March 2011, right before his final fall at badminton. So, some could argue Oliver might not have had the hard copy of what...
Wait, March 2011 or March 2012?
March 2011. Some might argue that Oliver did not have the hard copy of what the severity of the horse's kissing spine was up until March 2011, but he knew before badminton that year and chose to run him anyways, where they had their third horse fall together. And even before those x-rays, they were already treating him for severe back pain. So they already knew things were going on. This wasn't coming out of nowhere. This wasn't coming out of the blue.
Okay, so here's the thing. Oliver probably didn't cause the kissing spine, right? Like, he probably didn't have any way to cause that. That's the horse.
It's argued that the horse probably had the kissing spine while Emily was riding him. That if they had done a pre-purchase exam, they would have seen that the horse had severe kissing spine.
But caveat is, a horse with severe kissing spine is probably not a perfect gentleman to ride. You know what I, like, yeah. They probably have a lot of performance issues that you're dealing with daily. How are you getting through those performance issues in your regular rides and not, if he's going out and falling and having these, like, horrible runs, what is he doing at home?
And regardless of the, like, hard copy x-rays that they didn't get till March 2011, back in December 2009, Oliver and his team knew Splash was suffering from back pain. They were treating him, sure, but, like, I would argue after the first or perhaps the second serious fall, you might reconsider your treatment, which eventually they actually did. After his third fall, they ended up doing surgery, and that's when they were trying to bring him back in October at Osby when that was his final run. But it shouldn't have taken the horse having three catastrophic falls before we stopped trying to mask and cover up their pain. And this whole lawsuit arguing over Splash's worth just illustrates how much, like, the people in his lives failed him. And they just continued to ignore him. To the point that, like, while some sources I was reading cited Splash had been put down over neurological issues, which was assumed because he lost coordination on that final cross-country course, according to the vet records in the lawsuit, after he lost coordination on course at Osby, Splash was discovered to have a serious lung condition, and that's why he was put down.
Mm.
In case you're wondering about that lung condition, it wasn't new either. Oliver and his team found it, and it's confusing. They don't know if they found it in early 2010 or 2011. It's unclear from discovery which year it was found, but at the very least, they knew by the beginning of 2011 that they had discovered Splash was bleeding into his lungs.
Oh, he was a bleeder.
And they continued to run him.
Yikes.
They knew. But even before his final badminton fall, they knew. And still, you continue to run this horse? Are you kidding me?
2012 Olympics were right around the corner. They were in England. He had set his sights on being on the Olympic team that year. Like, I know that was his goal.
I know it was his goal, too. And it's like, yeah, clearly that was your goal. And this is what you're willing to put your horses through to obtain that. And Oliver stated after Splash was put down that he was a fantastic horse and I'm incredibly sad to lose him. But unfortunately, his problems were only ever going to get worse, so we were left with no option but to have him put down.
But I call BS on that because you put him down because you couldn't sell him.
I mean, I'm assuming at this point his issues had gotten so severe after, he had surgery, he was bleeding into his lungs. I don't know what the quality of life was after they continued to keep running him.
Okay, that's fair. Like, if the bleeding into the lungs, was that not exercise related? Or was that, like, a separate, he was constantly bleeding into his lungs?
It's unclear. They said he was fine to do 3-star courses that he didn't fill his lungs.
Yeah, okay, so it sounds like he's an exercise-induced bleeder.
Yeah, so, but I...
Then
I
you don't... retire the horse and say, thank you for your service. Like, we never have to ride you again. You chose to put him down. And yes, if he is uncomfortable, if he is in pain, again, I didn't see this horse. Maybe the lack of coordination was permanent. Maybe it was...
I'm guessing one of his three falls probably caused some other issues along with his severe kissing spine, that he probably did have other things happening that he probably didn't need to be put down. But it didn't come out of the blue.
Yeah,
it wasn't shocking. And he never should have been at that final event.
That's fair.
Where he lost coordination on course. And you're like, well, yeah, no, I guess you're right. It's finally time. Which brings us back to Carousel Quest. You heard Kelsey mention him earlier. Because I am a firm believer that most things don't happen only one time. If a person is willing to ignore a horse's limitations once, they're probably willing to ignore it a second time. And as we said earlier, Quest had been sold twice before Andrew Cothray bought him and giving the ride to Oliver, and had failed both vet checks up to that point. And even Oliver stated that Quest was quirky, and to get him to Burley, he did so without galloping him. And while Quest doesn't have his own lawsuit that flushes out his vet reports, I think it's fair to draw similar conclusions, especially as Quest was running at the same time as Splash, Ashdale Cruise Master, was.
I mean, asterisks are, you know, alternatively, we do know that vet checks, failing vet checks, has become the norm.
Fair.
And that a lot of horses are not purchased for failing what is, you know, the vet check is not to find a perfect horse. The vet check is to figure out what sort of maintenance, what sort of road you're going to be on with this horse. And a lot of people are now using vet checks to find perfection, and perfection doesn't exist. So is potentially, I'm just being, you know, playing devil's advocate, are those potential failures because the horse had minor issues that really had no impact on his ability to compete at the level?
Maybe, but then you could gallop on your way up to Burley.
Fair point. Then you would be able to gallop.
Maybe, but at the same, it's hard one because we haven't met these horses in person. We don't know. But based off of the evidence, I would not feel that it is amiss to assume something similar was going on with Carousel Quest. 2012, unfortunately for Oliver, in May, he wound up being banned from driving for 2 years due to being caught at almost twice the legal limit of alcohol whilst driving.
Oops.
Of course, this doesn't make you a bad person. People make mistakes and they learn from them. But Townend was a bit frustrated by it and told the magistrates that the ban would seriously incriminate his chances of inclusion on the British Olympic team. And telling my parents has gone down fairly horrendously. And it is an experience that I will not be repeated. I will not put myself in this position again.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to be like, my dad's really mad at me. Can you not punish me?
He also, in an interview, like a couple of years later, said that it was a mistake. He just, all he had was an extra, like, half a glass of wine. That, you know, was just a bummer. But, buddy, you were almost twice the legal limit.
Yeah.
That's not an extra half glass of wine.
No, the legal limit theoretically is super low, right? For
that's
a reason.
True. That's fair.
Because you are supposed to be able to operate still.
And it's never happened again. I totally understand that mistakes like this can happen. And while it was extremely irresponsible, he hasn't repeated it. It hasn't happened again.
So he's learned a lesson.
he's learned a lesson, one that strictly has to do with himself. You might be thinking, this is well and all good, but it's also from like 10 years ago. People change in 10 years. And maybe you can even write off what he did to Ashdale Cruise Master because it happened in 2011, not yesterday. Well, up until this point, Oliver has only received 2 out of his 10 verbal warnings, both happening in 2008 for running very tired horses. This all starts to change a little bit when 2014 rolls around. In March at Osberton, in 2014, Oliver received a verbal warning plus a fine for incorrect behavior towards a steward. Sure, nothing too wild or anything out of the ordinary, really. But a few months later, in May at Badminton, Oliver was riding the horse Armada, previously Andrew Nicholson's horse, and received a verbal warning for abuse of horse, excessive use of whip. This marks his first verbal warning regarding abuse of horse with a whip. It's a bit odd to me that his abuse of horse only garnered a verbal warning when, according to FBI rules, yellow card, warning card will be systematically awarded for the following offense, all cases of excessive use of the whip. But I guess I can see where officials were coming from, as it was his first incident dealing with abuse of the horse, excessive use of the whip. And yet, instead of that warning making him a bit more cautious or gentle in his riding, just 2 weeks later at Tattersall, Oliver received yet another verbal warning, this time on Sandman 3 for dangerous riding due to careless riding after the finish. Following this third verbal warning within a year, Oliver appeared to calm down a little bit, right? That was a lot of heat. 2012 was a lot. 2014, that's a lot of heat happening. So he calmed down from 2015 to 2016. And if this was one verbal warning regarding excessive use of the whip, perhaps all the way back in 2014, I could maybe look past it and say that he's changed his behavior. But I think, as we all know by now, Oliver did not change and has not changed. In 2017, in May, at Flora's Castle, Oliver received his second verbal warning for abuse of a horse, inappropriate use of the whip. Another verbal warning, with no yellow card, despite what FBI rules state. In August 2017, Oliver ended up winning Burley on Balamore Class, and the following year, in May 2018, he won Kentucky on Cooley Masterclass. So, after his win at Burley in Kentucky, this marked the second time Oliver was in running for the Rolex Grand Slam, where the prize money had gone up. I think it was around $350,000. So once again, not a small chunk of change, which meant badminton that year carried a lot of pressure. I think a lot of people are aware badminton 2018 didn't go well. He was on the receiving end of yet another verbal warning for overuse of the whip. However, he did not receive this warning on just one of his rides. He had two horses that year at badminton, Balamore Class and Cooley SRS. Oliver received this warning for both his rides on cross country that day.
I'm sorry, but do they give the warnings like later in the day? Like, I'm sorry, if I got a warning, I thought it's like right at, so you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know until like you did your first ride, no one said anything. You do your second ride, no one said anything. They tell you later? Or do you get like pulled at the end and they're like, hey, bro, chill with the whip?
I don't know on this one. Sometimes it can happen right afterwards. They'll pull you up at the finish, and sometimes it might happen a few hours later.
Okay. Because, yeah, I think if you got pulled after horse number one and they're like, bro, cool it, like, and then you go on and do it again, like, what? But I guess if no one told you until the very end of the day that, like, the way you rode both those horses was wrong.
It was wrong. It was wrong all day long. I mean, the one horse he whipped across the finish line.
And lots of people whip across the finish line. You're trying to make optimum time.
To warrant the warning, it is aggressive. It's atrocious to watch. And yet, the FBI ignored their rules once again, where this should have resulted in two yellow cards, was only met with verbal warnings. In fact, following Oliver being given two warnings, he was asked about it in an interview that day, and his post-interview response was, Kentucky last weekend felt fantastic and smooth for me, and I won it. Yesterday, I had to fight hard. I could win prettily, and I could win ugly, and that is why I'm 7 times British number one and world number one at the minute. Of course you're going to get critics, but AP McCoy, Lester Piggott, Conor McGregor, it doesn't matter who you are in sport. If you're at the top of your game, you're always going to get someone trying to trample you.
Not the greatest examples, to be completely honest.
Not great examples. And as you might have guessed, this was not received well. Oliver began getting quite a bit of backlash for one of the first times in his career. And he wound up releasing a second apology after the first one did not go down well.
An apology to the apology?
Pretty much, basically. His apology to the apology reads, having watched my Batman cross-country rounds for the first time when I got home last night, I'm so disappointed and upset about the way I rode. I didn't look good, and I don't want to look like that. I fully accept the warning I received from the ground jury. My competitive instincts got the better of me, and I will work hard to improve in this area. I really try hard to give my horses the best ride possible. I try to be as fit as possible, to be as light as I can be, to sit as still as I can, to get them on the best strides and take off points, to minimize the energy they have to waste. I care enormously about their well-being and their welfare. I feel I have let my amazing team down. I'm aware of my position in sport and my responsibility to be a suitable role model to the younger people, and I apologize to them. I love my horses. I live for them. I am extremely proud of all four horses, Balamore Class, Cooley SRS, and the two who went so brilliantly at Kentucky, Cooley Masterclass and MHS King Jules, and of every horse on my yard. Which, that was his little PR statement after his first apology didn't go so well, and he ended up being dropped by two of his sponsors, Jump for Joy and Lincoln Equestrian. Unfortunately, Oliver's apology had the desired effect that he wanted. It appeased quite a few people, as most could understand your competitor side getting the better of you at a time or two, especially when you had the Rolex Grand Slam, you know, sitting in your sights once again. But this was no longer his first instance.
Yeah.
And as we know, it's not his last. And sure, pretty worded apology is great, but like changing his actions would be better. And he didn't, because just a few months later at Land Rover Blair Castle International, August 26th, he received his fifth verbal warning for abuse of the horse, excessive use of the whip. His reasoning this day was that his horse was developing a bad habit of running out and that the horse had already done so in warm up. So he was going to nip that habit in the butt.
Well, on course seems the best place fix a training issue.
It occurred on Trey Glider running at the CIC 3-star. And according to the FBI rulebook, two yellow cards within 12 months result in a 2-month suspension. Since both of these incidents happened across three different horses, were all verbal warnings, there was no repercussion for him competition-wise. Even though, also FBI states in their rulebook, these all should have been automatic yellow cards. Make it make sense, people.
I don't understand why he gets such a pass.
Because no one wants a top rider who is getting results and winning medals to be suspended.
I guess I'm just confused because, yes, he's a top rider and he's ranked. Like, but who's providing protection? Like, that's my... Obviously, other top riders have gotten yellow cards, Buck Davidson being one of them. I think if anyone wants to protect anyone, right? Like, Buck is a legacy, right? Like,
I don't know. I mean, he's got to have some deep pocket backers or something that stops people from giving him what he deserves at this point. I mean, that's your fifth abuse of the whip, dude. Stop. It's not happening only in 1 year. This is happening spread out across multiple years.
Yeah, I mean, and the FEI is a weird organization. Like,
well, we know the FEI doesn't care.
Well, yeah, the fact that they're more concerned with what people are posting online than actually changing the behavior is insane to me. That, like,
gotta love it.
Right, that they are going, they're proposing a rule, I believe, that you cannot, as a member of the organization, critique the organization. Yo, excuse me, that you will have to be silent to whatever is occurring. So that is, yeah, the FEI wants a lot of skeletons, so they want them all in their closets, nobody to know. It just says someone else will win. Like, that's what I don't understand with this. Like, he goes away and someone else will win. Who cares who wins? Someone else will win and endorsements will happen and people will watch the TV. How is he such good TV? How is he such good, so good for the sport that we can't even risk alienating or losing him or giving him a yellow card or punishing him? Like, I don't understand.
I don't know, but it always appears that no one wants to suspend the person that's getting results. And he was and still is. I mean, we saw in 2021, Oliver with the British eventing team won a team gold medal at the Tokyo Olympics. So, like, he was getting results. And why would FEI or BE care about his past infractions when he's getting the results they want to see? I guess, but, like, you're right. If he was gone, somebody else would win.
Right. I don't understand the desire to support those that are causing your problems. FEI, if you want to stop horse falls on course that are being publicly broadcast, then don't support the riders who have a lot of horse falls. Simple as that. Like, I don't understand.
You know, for all intents and purposes, maybe Oliver had changed. That was 2018. He received all those warnings for abusing his horses with the whip. 2018 was 5 years ago now, so maybe he has changed. But 2022, Burley ran last year in September, where Oliver did not have a good time once again. He ended up having horse falls on both his 5-star rides, Swallow Springs and Treglider. Yeah, I don't know. FEI is not super concerned about stopping horse falls or anything else. And just 2 months after Burley, later in November at Stockholm, Oliver received another verbal warning. Guess what he received his verbal warning for this time?
Yelling at a steward.
No. Abusing his horse. Excessive use of the whip.
Not again.
I know. Oddly enough, though, for this infraction, no horse was listed specifically in this instance. And that's because it was an indoor eventing competition where they were basically doing, like, round robin with catch rides. And it wasn't his horse, but one someone had kindly lent for the competition, a 9-year-old by the name of Sotomayor.
Oh, my God. Oh, horse. Oh, my God. I thought you meant, like, a 9-year-old child was like, here, Ollie, ride my horse. And then they get to watch the horse be, like, beat around the course. So I was like, that's not scarring at all. Okay, 9-year-old horse. Yeah.
It was a 9-year-old horse by the name of Sotomayor. And if you watch the round, it's an ugly round. Like, the horse was clearly very overwhelmed by the environment and simply refused to go down the bank and eventually backed up enough that he fell off the edge and Oliver popped off over the horse's neck. Although I will say, I'm a little confused on this one because I think there was two rounds. Because in the round the horse fell, Oliver didn't have a whip in his hand. I think the abuse of the whip occurred in a previous round or maybe in warm-up, and he had his whip taken away.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And yet the horse still fell off the bank. Like,
he should have had a whip, Robin. He would have gotten the horse off the bank.
Do not encourage him. He does not need it.
I'm just saying.
So yeah, last year was the last time we've seen Oliver getting reprimanded for abusing his horses with his whip. But I'm not going to hold my breath hoping he's changed, because without fail, he always circles back around. And in fact, those were not his last warnings. This year, May 2023, Oliver was riding Swallow Springs at Badminton. And if that horse's name sounds familiar, that's because it is. Swallow Springs fell on course in 2022 at Burley and was actually one of Andrew Nicholson's horses before Townen took over the ride. Oliver wound up getting yet another warning, no yellow card this time, for dangerous riding, series of dangerous jumps. And you can easily find this round on YouTube or even snippets of it posted all over TikTok. And he absolutely should have pulled Swallow Springs up much sooner. They crashed through a table fence at fence 19, triggering the frangible pins. And Swallow Springs like kept hitting and dragging his hind end over pretty much the entire last half of the course. And it's very apparent that Swallow Springs was hitting those jumps hard. Like, and continuing to run the horse in that state is just begging for a serious fall. And you just had one at Burley.
Who even cares if the horse falls? Like, injury. Like, you're scraping up your horse as you go over every jump. Like, why does that not matter?
He's not just scraping. I mean, there's a few times you watch Swallow Springs hits those jumps and he's hitting them so hard. And, like, you can just see, like, he's not lame, but he's definitely cantering away from those jumps a little bit unsound and a little funky in his hind end.
Right, because it stings.
Yeah, he hit hard.
Right, and like that is really common to have horses, like they'll hit a jump and then they're not lame after, they've just like stung themselves really hard. So it's like rolling your ankle where you take like 20 steps and you're fine again, but it hurts.
Right, and on court, like, and it didn't just happen once. He was hitting a lot of jumps. It was just happening, triggered the frangible pins and crashed through a table once. You see them going through the water and the horse is like scrambling over the jump in the water and like drops his back end again. The horse should have been pulled up a long time before he was. And unfortunately, Oliver wasn't the one to pull himself up on cross country. The ground jury did.
Yikes.
And they did the right thing. They forced him to stop and retire, eliminating him for riding an exhausted horse.
Yeah.
But it's funny because riding an exhausted horse, according to the FBI rules, all cases of riding an exhausted horse will incur a yellow warning card and disqualification, and the case will be referred to the FEI for further disciplinary action. What did he get the warning for?
For an exhausted horse?
No. Dangerous riding.
I don't get it.
That should have resulted in an automatic yellow card. Oliver didn't receive a yellow card. No, what he got was another verbal warning, because the 9 before that all did so freaking well. This one for just dangerous riding, a series of dangerous jumps. So no, Oliver hasn't changed his behavior, but neither has the FEI. One of them is just happening to enable the abuser. But I would say this badminton showed a very different perspective for many, and that a fair few riders are fed up with him. I saw some people speak out about his behavior. And in the past, his excessive use of the whip has been written off or glossed over. For once, you know, people were actually outraged at it. And I hope people start holding him accountable. But based off the track record, I don't think anyone's going to hold him accountable, especially not FEI.
That's insane. Just how many instances he's had over the years, over and over and over. He didn't learn anything.
It's all, and these are at big events. And the incidences are happening, you know, a few years after one after the other, which is like, he finally gets off his good behavior again and is like, whoops, sorry.
Yeah.
My bad. I just, you know, so competitive. Following people's outcry over his mistreatment of his horses, here this year, Oliver decided to remove the list of his sponsors from his website. However, you cannot defeat the Wayback Machine, Mr. Townsend. Your last known sponsors. I found the list.
Okay.
Apparently, a bunch of people also reached out to them and none of them really cared. They said they were looking into it and some said that silly mistakes happen. But his last known sponsors were Gain Equine Nutrition, Equitrek, TRM Supplements, Voltaire, Point Two, Mac Wet Gloves, Mirrors for Training,
cool,
Veritas, Mitchell Fox, Cyclosage, which is, I think, a massage company, SureGrow, and Flair, like the Flair strips across the horse's nasal passages. So to finish, to wrap up, because we've been here for a little bit, on a personal note, Oliver is dating Isabel Taylor, also known as Izzy Taylor, and has been for quite a few years now. However, Izzy Taylor has recently been getting quite a bit of backlash from treating her own employees very poorly and was at risk of going to jail after being convicted for breaching fire safety rules at Aldershot Farm after a fire did occur back in 2020. She also, in the past, has gotten in trouble for refusing to pay her workers, and those workers have won their cases in employment tribunals. And you know what they say, you know, regarding people you surround yourself with. You tend to surround. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You tend to become the people you surround yourself with, you know, your reflection.
Yes. And then there are a few rumors that I have read about Oliver that I'm hesitant to share, just because we really like to back up everything that we share with our resources, which we do. All of our resources are linked in the description box for the episode. However, the description box has like a limit to the number of characters that you can fit in there. So as many references as I can fit in there are listed. If you want the rest, please, for the love of God, just reach out to me. I have them all. I will give them to you happily. I'm hesitant to share other rumors and allegations against him because we don't have articles to back it up, or, you know, that.
Yeah.
So a few of the rumors I've come across for Oliver, one was that about 10 years ago, a horse broke its leg whilst training and had to be euthanized. There's two girls at his barn for work experience were forced to remove the horse's tack, and that Townsend seemed much more concerned about retrieving the tack and boots from the deceased horse than the fact that the horse had passed away. I can't find an article confirming it. It's just rumors, as well as apparently back in 2021, he had some issues between him and some of the FEI folks at Blair Castle. But once again, I can't find any other information on it to back it up or to give further explanation about it. So it's just kind of, those little bits are just hearsay. But yeah, that's Oliver Townend.
Yes. So I actually want to read this quote from British Eventing Life and share these two snips, because I just think it's so interesting. After, this is a 2021 article. It was posted at the end of 2021. Or I guess it says winter 2021. So that could have been the beginning or the end, I guess. Depends what they classify as winter 2021. It's not a great date, British Eventing Life. Could you actually just put the date? But what I'm saying is this is recent. So this is a quote from Oliver. "People didn't understand me to start with, and a lot of people still don't," he says earnestly. "I think I'm becoming more accepted. People say to me, oh, you've changed so much. But I haven't really changed. It's that their opinion has changed. People see what they want to see, and it's the people who know you best who really know you. You could never walk in here, my yard, and not be impressed by how the horses are kept. The beds, the immaculate yard, but some people don't want to see that side. They'll always pick holes in you." That's his opinion.
Sorry to pick holes in you, buddy, but I got all the warnings that back up the holes being poked.
He doesn't seem to understand or care. And he admits he's not changed. Just your opinion of me has. Which I think is an interesting take.
And I think that really truly shows in the fact that even this year he's still getting warnings for inexcusable riding. He still hasn't changed. We're probably going to see more warnings for him in the future. And I really, really doubt that we'll ever see him get a yellow card. Based off the 10, 15 year track record, you're not going to see anything from FEI. They're not going to do anything.
And I think he knows that this is how he started. This is how he will continue to ride. And people became more accepting of him because he started winning. And they stopped caring.
Yeah.
But he never changed. This is how he treats his horses. This is how he operates.
Yeah, the whole excuse of him in the beginning where he was like, people just don't want to buy my horses. I think part of it's because you're running broken down horses, some of them.
Yeah, because that would have been 2010, 2011. So that's right when the splash incident.
Actually, and that's Carousel Quest. That's two horses with known challenges, physical limitations, physical pain and challenges.
Yeah. So I also think there's other horses, if you look at his records and the amount of falls he's had with them and withdrawals and retirements, there's other horses that have interesting records in his barn that are definitely questionable owners that go along with them. But a lot of that is, you know, allegedly, because we don't have lawsuits to expose all of the records.
Please don't sue us, jeez.
But I do think you can see, you know, it's like the Jorge Navarro thing. You can look and say, oh, there's a horse and he started drugging that horse this day because I can tell by the speed, right? I think there's certain things where you can look at those patterns and say, okay, something is happening here.
Yes.
There's a pattern going on with these horses, and then they just disappear.
I would 100% agree. And I think his actions are very telling. And I think his actions speak louder than anything we have to say. I'm just glad people are finally seeing that it's the love for the horses, the apologies he puts out after just tragic behavior is just pretty fluff, pretty words. He's not changing anything. He doesn't love his horses more than anything else. He wants to win. So thank you for listening. Glad to be back. Don't know when we'll return either.
Hopefully soon.
Did we have a sign off?
Yeah, we used to say something. I know, I was just realizing, I was like writing down my like little thing. I think we used to say something along the lines of like, stay safe, stay classy, stay in the saddle, and like, don't whip your horses excessively. Like, just be kind. It's really not that hard. And Robin, you were right. Go ahead. You told us. You told us this whole time.
I was right. For once I was. Listen, I am a very naive person. I believe the best in everybody. But for once, I was right. Everyone else pulls the, they're like, oh, look, this person was bad. I'm like, oh, I guess, I suppose so. But this one, I was right. I have been telling you since 2016. I remember it.
Okay, but remember, I knew Marilyn Little was bad like way before too. So thank you.
Okay, I didn't know that one.
There's just some people that like something happens and you're like, something's weird here. So.
But we neither of us knew with George Morris until we actually dug deeper into it. So,
yeah, no okay. clue.
You
no.
win some, you lose most.
Yeah, no clue he was that way.
Whoops.
Yeah, whoops on that one.
Bye.